Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bookshow. Then go over to morbidlybeautiful.com as we are now part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcasting Network.
It's alive!
Everybody here dies by dawn.
Dead by dawn!
Welcome
to the Spook Show.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the All-American Spook Show podcast. I'm Josh and I'm joined here with Donnie.
Yo.
Tiana.
Hey.
And the Professor Smoke. And, you know, if you've been a longtime listener of the podcast, you probably know that in various ways we're at least fans or at least grew up in the era where we all watched movies on VHS and everything. So we figured it would be a good time to swing back around. We've actually done a couple of shows in the past about not necessarily VHS collecting, but just talking about the history of home video and stuff like that. And Donnie, did you ever look up to see how long ago that was that we did? This was like at least around 2 years or so ago.
Of course you would put me on the spot.
Yeah, it was around 2 years ago. We called it like what, History of Home Video Part 1 or something like that.
Yeah, it was Part one, and that was 2 years ago.
Yeah, and then we never swung back around to it. So we figured it was a good time to kind of swing back around to it. But we're not necessarily going to call this part two. We nabbed an interesting interview because I stumbled upon this book. It's a book called VHS Collecting, The Modern Relevance of Home Video, and it's written by Corey J. Gorski. So we asked Corey, I got in touch with Corey, see if he would come on and chat about all things VHS collecting and just everything about it. And he agreed to come on. So welcome to the show, Corey.
How you doing? Thank you for having me on.
I gathered from your book, you actually live in Canada, right?
Yeah, I'm just outside of Toronto. So
okay. So we're all of us live in the Carolina, mostly grew up or currently live in South Carolina. So a completely different side of the VHS board, I guess, maybe, right? I mean, like, I'm sure you had things up there that we didn't have, vice versa, right?
Maybe a little bit. I was in Iceland like 2 years ago, and they still have a video store in the main town of Reykjavik. And there was like I just asked him, and he was like, "What are you, stupid? VHS? Of course we had VHS." But I'm like, it's a pretty like very very tiny little kind of city and country. But yeah, it was around the world.
Now this place you went to, they still had it, like still renting it, or
they were renting DVDs and Blu-rays.
Okay, so they had upgraded.
And they had stuff for sale. Yeah, they had a back wall behind the counter, just racks of tapes, mm-hmm. Out of box, like just in the plastic clamshells. But they said they still had them. They weren't, I don't know if they were renting them to just locals or I don't know what they were doing with it, but yeah, they still had, a collection.
Wow. So as far as this book is concerned, which you can find on Amazon, and I'm sure there's other ways, right, that people can go grab this book?
Mainly Amazon.
Okay. Yeah, if you look up his name, Corey J. Gorski, or you just type in VHS collecting, it'll probably pop up pretty quick, yep. Right? But as far as what gave you the idea to write this book?
I just kind of looking around and realizing that nobody had really written up on it, and it was just sort of like a blank spot. And I just took initiative, something that I was still just, like I'd always collected, but I was really discovering the fact that there was so much community and so much archiving and so much detail and nuance to the whole thing that as I learned, I kind of documented it and it just became a book eventually.
So how long have you been collecting VHS?
I mean, since I was a kid, when I walked over to the convenience store and I went to rent a copy of Return of the Living Dead 2 from some convenience store. And he's like, "Sorry, I can't rent that to you." And I'm like, "Oh, because I'm too young." And he goes, "No, it's for sale." And I'm like, "Oh, well, I'll buy it." And he's like, "Okay." It's $10 or whatever it was. And yeah, and since then I've just always been buying them since, I guess that would have been like the mid-90s.
So I think Smoke has you there. Now it sounds like he's probably a little bit older than you, but like Smoke, you've been collecting what, since the 80s, right?
The granddad of the podcast.
Yeah.
I'm 50. So, but yeah. And I don't know. It could be, I'm sure it's different versus not necessarily Canada versus US, you know, video stores in time, but rural versus urban. Sometimes there was actually, I mean, I had it lucky here where I'm at, and it's a small town, South Carolina, but we had like I guess back around 1989 or so, whenever I was able to drive, I had multiple video store like memberships, at least 8 or 9 memberships in this small town. I mean, which is, you know, all mom and pop video stores or whatever. So, so it was interesting. I guess it depends. And I hear some people say, well, you know, we had like 3 video stores. I mean, you know, so I don't know if it's versus, you know, urban, like I said, versus rural, state to state, what it was. But I know I was lucky here at least.
Yeah. And, yeah. And you were able to pick up a lot of really good stuff throughout the years, probably before everything kind of got expensive over the last decade or so, right?
Well, for me personally speaking, it was, yeah, that before, well, those mom and pop video stores, they would, you know, sell off their tape stock of, you know, little by little, just overstock stuff or whatever they were getting rid of. But for me, I was old enough to, my parents went with Beta versus the VHS and the whole format wars. They picked Beta, unfortunately.
Yeah.
As it was going out. So I bought, you know, Betamax tapes first whenever these, you know, video stores were getting rid of their stock of those. And I still have Texas Chainsaw and Godzilla 1985, those first two tapes I bought on Betamax. Then as Blockbuster came in, luckily it was later on. I don't think Blockbuster came here until like 89 or so. Of course, then that started putting, unfortunately, started putting out of business some of those mom and pop retailers, and which I hated to see them go, but I was able to get some cool big box VHS tapes back then for very cheap, you know. And then they would also sell posters 4 for a quarter. I mean, 4 for a dollar. Any video, you know, these video store posters, whenever they were done promoting them, they just throw them in the bin for 4 for a dollar. I still have a Burial Ground poster from back in the day.
Nice.
Unfortunately, I don't have the other ones. I had like a Henry Portrait of a Serial Killer, you know, a whole bunch of them that they just would sell for a quarter that are now kind of, you know, shudder to think how much it's, you know, going for now. And then when Blockbuster came in, that's, you know, I started buying up more of those tapes. Even Blockbuster would put some stuff on there. But I know as everybody knows who buys, you know, rented or bought overstock from Blockbuster, if you're into like really cult horror films, you weren't getting a whole lot of great stuff from there. You know, you were getting the more mainstream stuff. But I got some of those, too, for pretty cheap. And then the next boom of VHS buying for me was when DVD came along in 98, 99. And a little bit further into the early 2000s, people started getting rid of their VHS after they would, you know, buy them on DVD. And I got a ton of great stuff for super cheap prices compared to what they're going for now, let's say. So that's kind of my history of it. And then now, of course, I still buy, but I'm not the one to spend a ton of money. I'm more into like going to flea markets, thrift stores, and trying to find things in the wild that I can, you know. I know that they're way up there now. Like, let's say Last House on Dead End Street, that tape has always been worth a lot of money. I don't even know what it's up to now, but even 10 years ago, it was going for $600. So.
That, and one thing you brought up there, Smoke, when you were talking about, you know, the different eras or whatever, being able to buy stuff, and you talked about Blockbuster, that was an interesting thing that I found in your book, Corey, that you wrote about that I had never really thought much about. Now, granted, I'm not in the VHS collecting like as much as you guys are. I have some, but nothing like you guys have, but I'd never thought about the fact that Blockbuster didn't really rent out that kind of low budget, you know, lesser mainstream type fare. All they stuck to like Freddy Jason, right? The bigger titles, and they didn't have a lot of that stuff. So really that meant that like a lot of that type of stuff that, you know, people want to go after, it makes it even more rare, right? Because Blockbuster basically didn't carry it.
Typically, yeah. I mean, some did a little bit here and there if it snuck by, but for the most part, a lot of tapes did get kind of either not picked up or tossed, or just they didn't end up making it into the Blockbuster shelf. Some of the more like sleazy B movies, some of the more foreign, you know, exploitation, gore stuff, probably wouldn't have made it onto the Blockbuster shelves, but once in a while, something did. Sometimes you could find something that snuck through, but yeah, you're right. Most of it, it got shelved somewhere else.
So essentially, if you were not like, you know, the professor there in the, say, the late 80s, early 90s, when a lot of those mom and pop started going away in the early 90s, I guess, and you didn't snatch up some of those titles, then 5, 10, 15 years later, they became a lot harder to get because Blockbuster didn't really have many of them. And now it's even more rare, right? It's just time.
Now as the collectors start picking them through eBay and then they start to dwindle, then all of a sudden people start to realize, well, wait a minute, I can just charge whatever I want after a while and just keep lowering the price until somebody finally buys it. And kind of a cheap tactic, but I mean, that's how things go up in value like that. Yeah, it's the scarcity,
yeah,
for sure.
And it makes sense because like, another thing too about specifically with, I guess with anything really, but to VHS specifically, like as time goes on, the tapes will fall apart, right? You know, like these things will just go away.
Yeah, a little bit. I mean, mold is a problem in when it comes to tapes, but yeah, just falling apart. I mean, I would still keep it. You could usually fix it if it's not, you know, completely ripped to pieces. Mm-hmm. But even some of the boxes, like I've had people find like amazingly rare boxes that are just water damaged and it's just, it's unsalvageable. But yeah, there is a shelf life to it. It's more than most people think, but yeah, it can, a lot of them did get destroyed over the late '90s, early 2000s. You stick it in your garage, you start collecting DVDs and all of a sudden people would put them out at a garage sale and it's just completely molded and water damaged to hell. But, yeah. Yeah, it happens.
Yeah, that's probably, as Corey knows, and like, all of you, Josh, I know you buy tapes too, probably out in the wild. That's the first thing I do. As soon as I see a tape that I'm interested in, pull it out, make sure there's not any mold on it. And then also decide how much mold is on it. And is it, I mean, it's only a dollar. Do I want this for the case as well? You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Just also another thing, and Corey, I'm sure, knows about this too, is if you have a separate deck, you can, if it's a minimum mold, you can run a tape, you know, fast forward or rewind to a deck and knock off some of that mold or whatever, you know, that way. There's other ways too, but you can always have a separate.
You found a sandwich in the trash can.
You just scrape that mold off with a knife.
Yeah.
But no, yeah, you could totally salvage a tape that's moldy. There's some tricks online, YouTube tutorials. I'd recommend it if it's something rare that you think is just, oh, it's garbage. No, you could probably salvage it.
And the mold thing is obviously, I obviously hear mold that's bad, but like that can be bad because it can spread to other tapes and stuff, right? Like if you've got a few in your collection and you're not really paying attention to it, it can spread to other tapes, right?
It's possible, but I don't know. It's not like it's a big thing where it's like a virus spreading throughout your house. Not quite like that, but it's definitely recommended you clean it or take care of it if it's excessive and, mm-hmm. you know, put it in some sort of case and just keep it a little bit like take care of it and clean it and keep your environment at a, you know, reasonable temperature and humidity, and you probably be fine.
What are some of the tapes that you have found out in the wild or you bought, you know, randomly that maybe some of your better ones, not necessarily your most valuable or anything like that, but some of the ones you were like, wow, I can't believe I just found this, or can you think of a couple that come on?
I mean, the last one I found that was decent, probably the Warner Brothers clamshell release of Creepshow. I found that for like 25 cents.
Wow.
I don't do a lot of hunting these days, but like a buddy of mine, he just finds the most ridiculous shit that you'd imagine, like just the rarest stuff. Like he won't pay more than a dollar for it, but he's got like the rarest collection I've ever seen.
Probably the kind of dude that just looks down and there's a four leaf clover. Like as soon as he looks down, instead of looking for it, hey, what do you know?
This guy's literally found bags of money like scattered on the highway. I'm like, are you kidding me? But yeah, so he's one of those.
You
guys.
Need to take him to Vegas.
I know. But yeah, I mean, I found a lot of more common stuff in the wild over the past few years, maybe like just before the pandemic. And it was, I don't know, maybe like 50 common horror tapes that you'd probably think are okay, but like nothing crazy.
Do you think that, cause I know the pandemic and COVID changed a lot of things. Do you think it changed as far as VHS collecting for better or for worse?
Well, that's an interesting question. I never thought about that.
Well, because I know it did. Cause I collect comic books and I collect, like trading cards, you know, various sports and stuff. And I know it did have a major effect on those. So I'm curious if you know, or have noticed or heard anything that it had any effect on the.
Like you're saying it went up in value.
Yeah. Especially cards. And I know with like trading cards and stuff, it became a thing because I guess everybody was kind of like shutting the houses and everything. So everybody starts going through their stuff and putting it on eBay and they start buying all the new stuff up. And then it became harder to find cards for a while. So it kind of just drove the market up for a while. And now I think it's kind of come back down to earth, but
to be honest, I haven't even thought about it, but you might be right. It's definitely gone up over the last 4 years. I'll give you that. If it's because people were like more at home, I don't know. It could very well be. I wrote the book before everything went down, but like I went to release it in like April 2020, mm-hmm. when like shit was just hitting the fan here.
Yeah.
And I couldn't even order press, like just the author's copy from KDP Publishing. I couldn't even get it because they like the mail system was all screwed up. Wow. And it's already bad here in Canada. So like it was a shit show. But I've never really thought about, has it affected the sales? Yeah, maybe. It's definitely gone up over the past 4 years. And how much of that though is because of that? And how much is it because people like are hitting their 30s, 40s, people who grew up at the video store, who grew up renting this stuff, are now hitting an age where they can afford to buy it. Yeah. And they can afford $50 on eBay. Maybe some of them have good jobs and it's just, yeah, what's nothing. Sure, I'll buy that one tape I've been hunting for.
Yeah.
I don't know, but you might be right.
It's intermission. Ice cream, candy, lemonade too, and there's a hot dog waiting for you.
The popcorn's popping and it's ready to go. You know all the great food is stealing the show.
Get up out your seat and get yourself a tasty treat down at the snack bar. Snack bar.
Is the grading, like, I think they started grading VHSs now like comics, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't really want to. That's a really controversial issue because a lot of people are finding that the people who are grading them, I don't know about you, but it tends to be people who aren't really into movies, or especially not into horror, especially not into like I was thinking about this the other day, like there are books out there where people are buying the stickers that people put on VHS tapes.
Oh yeah, like the horror.
Like exactly. There's like a desire to, for like somebody rented this. Somebody, you know, rented this Last House on the Left, and they were holding this Be Kind Rewind sticker, and it's half torn off. Yeah, but like that's what gives the tape character. Grading seems to be the complete opposite of everything I just said. Mm-hmm. It seems to be like, you know, how pristine it is.
They're actually going in and removing them to make it more valuable.
Is that the case? Oof.
Well, I would imagine if you're trying to get something graded, yeah, you would want that as, you know, you would want to clean it up and get it as pristine as you could. Yeah.
See, that's where I would have a problem with too. Like I would be the one to rather have that green horror sticker or yellow comedy or whatever the case may be. The video store, video update, like you said, half torn off. Like you said, that gives a character. Me, that's a preference for, like, that's why I guess I would never do the whole grading or buying the grading thing, just because for those reasons too, I think. For comics and that type of thing, see, I think that's where there's a difference for me personally between, say, comics and baseball cards and whatnot and VHS tapes, because at least, and I speak for myself, but for others too, I think those types of things, like Corey said, gives a character, the stickers and all that stuff all over it, that people who buy these out in the wild, most of the time, don't take those things off. They like to have them, to keep them on there or whatever. So, and whereas the value, though, it would devalue something if a comic book had a sticker on the front of it or this, that, the other thing, you know, or, you know, crayon marks on the inside. Of course, you don't want that in your comic books, but that's, for me, that's where the difference would be.
Plus, it comes into, like, are you the kind of, and this is with anything, whether it's, you know, whatever you're collecting, are you a hands-on, I want to, like, actually hold it in my hand and mess around with it? Do I want to watch the movie? Do I want to look at the box and stuff? Or are you the kind of person that wants to, I need to keep it pristine and perfect, you know, put it in this plastic case and and just sit it on a shelf and never mess with it.
Yeah. See, that I'm also that. I'm the other guy that's going to buy the, you know, if I found Last House on the Dead Street in the wild, first of all, I jump up and down for joy, you know, but then I'm going to stick it in the VCR and watch it.
Yeah.
This $1,000 or whatever, you know, the tape's worth nowadays, but yeah, I'm definitely the kind personally that will watch whatever I have in it. I mean, although it would be nice to get some of those nice big box collector sleeves. I don't have too many of those, but I don't know if they're going around. I do need some of those.
Yeah, the protective cases. That's totally different. Like, I can understand somebody has a protective case. I've done that in case you drop it. But when you want to get it sealed, graded, and put a number on it, listen, you ask some people, this isn't my opinion, but you ask some people, they would say it's a little bit of a scam, money laundering stuff going on. I don't know.
Yeah.
I don't know. I'm just saying.
To me, it's kind of a speculator's market type of thing, you know, like, because if they can slap a grade value, a number on it, you say, well, this is in better condition than the next one, you know? So since I know I have this assigned value on it, it's worth more because you can see there's the number, you know, this is better than yours kind of thing, you know? So I think it's for people that want to flip them and sell them, you know, really.
Yeah. And if you want to flip them and sell them, to me, you're not a collector. You're not a fan.
No.
When you see VHS swaps going on, you don't see people trading graded tapes. They're trading, you know, tapes that they've watched that they're expecting you to, you know, put up in your collection and actually, like, you know, participate in, and not just put it behind glass.
Yeah.
That is the great thing about that. The social aspect of VHS traders and whatnot is that, well, for instance, like recently I just picked up, we did this on the podcast a while back, Strike Commando, right? This guy was selling the Strike Commando Avid VHS. And then I asked him if he had it, and then I forgot that I even messaged him about it. Almost like 3 weeks later, I said, "Oh shit, I'm sorry. Do you still have it? I understand if you don't." And he did. And not only that, but he said, "Hey, I have this German version, this German clamshell under the Cobra Force name. Would you like that too?" And I'm thinking, "Yeah, I'd like that, but how much?" In my head, like, "How much is he going to be selling me both of these tapes for?" And I asked him. He's like, $20 shipped. I'm like, "Hell yeah!" That type of you're going to get the people out there that are going to jack the prices up because they're trying to make, like you said, almost like a money laundering, make money off of this stuff. But if you get into the right groups online or in actual real life and VHS swaps, you'll find people that aren't trying to rip you off. And it becomes a communal kind of thing, which is pretty cool.
Yeah, absolutely. The whole thing, like the whole money laundering thing, is more like you see a copy of like the Goonies go for $13,000.
Oh yeah.
No, nobody's paying $13,000 for Goonies. You can find that at the thrift store.
Hmm. Well, like the Disney Diamond thing that was going around for a while. I don't know if that was a thing. I remember hearing about that, but then I don't know that people were paying. And I mean, I don't know if they were necessarily certain types of diamond ones, but the diamond collection, like that you would find at any thrift store for a couple, you know, $3 or $4.
I think that was almost same kind of thing.
Yeah, almost every thrift store has black diamonds. It's literally like one of the most common things you'll find. I know the guy that wrote the Snopes article on it too. It's just, I think it was a joke that got out of hand at some point.
So some people, it got out of hand and people believed it and they were trying to put them on eBay for prices.
It's what it seems to be. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, those type of things always start somewhere, right? There'll be some article or somebody starting a rumor in a chat group or something. And then it becomes the stuff of legend, you know, urban legend type, you know, "Oh, you got to get this because they're worth a ton. You can, you know, you find this 50 cent VHS and you can flip it for $13,000. It's crazy, you know." And then, and then there's the fever pitch, and that's where everybody goes out and starts buying all the VHS. And then, you guys that just want it because you want it can't get it at a reasonable price.
That's the story of the VHS collector's life from, like I said, from that golden sort of age, whenever DVDs came along, when everybody was selling theirs and selling them cheap on eBay. Well, I mean, some tapes were going for a lot anyways, but I mean, most of them, they were selling fairly cheap. And then the nostalgia factor. And then also some people who weren't even born in the age of VHS, that kind of yearning for a time before, you know, they didn't, it just became a nostalgia factor for people who grew up in that time and for people who didn't grow up in that time, a boom that, drove the prices up, I guess.
You know, we've been talking about VHS in broad terms here in this conversation, but Corey, what do you think in particular makes horror VHS more collectible than any other genre?
It's a good question. I talk about it a little bit in the book. To me, it's a genre of extremes. You're going to have the best, you're going to have the worst, you're going to have everything in between. It's something that was lost to time a little bit when Blockbuster took over. And like, as you're saying, a lot of these more exploitative horrors kind of got pushed to the back, disappeared. And it's just the genre in general. I mean, it's if you have an appreciation for that sort of thing, it really separates you from a lot of the norm, more so than like, you know, drama, comedy, or anything really. If you're into horror, you kind of like, chances are you also collect, I don't know, maybe if it's not tapes, it's statues or it's standees, like posters. There's probably some, like, there's conventions for horror movies. There's not conventions for drama films, as far as I know.
Yeah. I'm sure there's one somewhere, but yeah, you're right. Yeah.
I haven't heard of it. If there is, hey, good for them. But yeah, I mean, it's really the genre, but it's also the fact that this particular thing has also been kind of lost to time. I think it's like a dual appeal sort of going on there.
What do you think, Smoke?
Yeah, I also agree. I know this is audio, so I'm holding up like an old big box VHS of like Return of the Aliens and Deadly Spawn. And for speaking personally back then, as you're coming into this horror thing, like not knowing, you didn't have the internet, of course, so you couldn't just look things up. You basically had Fangoria, Gorezone, fanzines like Psychotronic or Deep Red from Chaz Balin. And you would go through these things and look for certain titles or whatever that you know, that's how you discover Lucio Fulci films or et cetera, et cetera. And so then looking at those boxes, the box art on the big airbrush, you know, big box VHS tapes, not even knowing the movie and knowing that the movie's probably not going to live up to what's painted on the cover of it or the blurb that's on the back, but still renting it and still loving it and then growing your, you know, collection that way as far as previously viewed or back at that time, the gray market thing of double, you know, yeah, we had two VHS decks. So I built my collection before I could afford it, you know, by dubbing, you know, VHS rentals. But yeah, just seeing that box art for me was, that kind of brought me back around. I never stopped buying VHS. It's just, of course, when the DVD came along, I picked that up as well and started buying DVDs. But see, being able to go back and buy some of those big box tapes that I remember seeing on the shelves back then, you know, when you're just perusing the video store, was cool to do whenever it was fairly cheap, you know, like when DVDs would come along, like I said earlier. So that was part of it for me, is just discovering things that you didn't know by reading the box and looking at the art and taking it home. And maybe it's great, maybe it sucks, maybe it's whatever, but just discovering them that way grew my knowledge of horror and of certain directors and special effects guys, and having to find all those too. Like, you find a tape by Lucio Fulci and then you like him, and then you're like, this movie's directed by some guy named Lewis Fuller. And then you kind of, you know, try and piece things together. Oh, okay, this guy was in Lucio Fulci. This is probably a Lucio Fulci movie. So discovering things that way, it was a lot more difficult back then, I guess, than it is now. I mean, it's a lot easier to go on IMDb and find stuff. But that mystery of finding these types of movies from your favorite director when they weren't necessarily all that easy to do, I guess all of that added up for me for my love of VHS collecting and horror.
Yeah. Tell me if I'm wrong. You guys probably had to hunt around video stores for a film that you read about or had heard about. You had to call them up, see if you have it, you know, yep. Go through every little bottom dusted off rack of tapes. Oh yeah.
Yep. Not only that, but you would also got to go through, because sometimes you would go and ask for something and they're like, oh yeah, we have that. And they're looking back, I can't remember what, you know, it's not in the horror section. We have it. So then I would be perusing the entire video store, the action section, and you know, somebody just picked up the case and stuck it somewhere back in the days when it was, some of these mom and pops didn't have necessarily the best filing system or whatever. But also for me, there's the Holy Grail. Anybody who rented VHS back then and was a horror fan or a cult movie fan of some sort has a Holy Grail thing that they were hunting. And for me, it was Cannibal Holocaust, because I'd heard about this movie, read about it in like Gorezone and Fangoria and all this stuff. But, you know, again, with no internet, you don't know the fact that this movie was never officially put on VHS. So you're looking for a needle in a haystack. The only way that you would have found it was a gray market type thing of a Japanese, you know, Laserdisc dubbed to VHS, which I didn't discover that until later, till like 1990 or so is when I discovered a gray market tape trading of like Japanese Laserdisc dubs and et cetera, to get uncut letterbox version. So yeah, I scoured the video store shelves, calling all the video stores, looking for Cannibal Holocaust, and of course never found it until I found the tape trading thing.
So that's great. You called up video stores saying, do you guys have Cannibal Holocaust? I'm looking for Cannibal Holocaust.
I did. I actually even, like, they said, well, we could look. No, we don't have it, but I have this catalog. So they would go through the catalog looking for the title, and of course, you know, again, they were never going to find it because it didn't exist as an official tape in the U.S. anyway. I don't know if Canada, do you know if they did they release it in Canada, Corey, back in the day or no?
Back in the day, I don't think so, because I never saw it on any shelves and I looked around a lot. If they did, like maybe some mom and pop, theoretically, they probably did, but it wasn't common, that's for sure.
You really
and back in those,
that conversation that you really unlocked a memory of how like you used to go to the video store, and like I remember looking for the roll cart or the rack of like tapes that like people had brought back, but they hadn't put out on the shelves yet. So you'd be like, oh shit, there's that movie, you know, that I wanted, you know, so you'd snatch it off the cart before they put it out there and somebody else would get it. I'd completely forgot about that.
And another thing was scouring the other sections. Like, even though I was a massive horror fan and major, that's what I was mainly looking for, I would hit the action adventure shelves looking for these cult films that got scattered in there. Like, in other words, Emmanuel and the Last Cannibals. I found that title. I didn't know anything about Emmanuel and the Last Cannibals.
With the Emmanuel movies again.
I was thinking, I was like, no.
No.
It was called Trap Them and Kill Them under that title. So I didn't even know that it was a softcore movie. He just, so, and I didn't even know it either. I didn't know what it meant because it said Trap Them and Kill Them. I'm like, oh, it's a cannibal film. I'm going to rent this. And he rented it. And they didn't care who they rented to either back then. I'm like, you know, I'm probably 14 or 15 at that time, maybe. Maybe I was more like 13, probably. But anyways, he rented it to me. I'm like, whoa, this is an Emmanuel film. What is this Emmanuel film?
This is even better than I was hoping for.
Yeah, you got a little bit more to bargain for. It's more than zombies in that one. I mean, more than cannibals in that one, rather. Oh, and speaking of cannibal zombies, when I discovered Dr. Butcher MD, that movie, I forced that movie on all my friends who weren't that big a horror fan as I was. I made them watch. And they still remember that movie.
Hey, you know. I can see you now, like, you put it on, and you're not even watching the movie. You're just watching the person.
Yeah.
Let's see. Yeah. Let's see how he reacts.
I did that with Gates of Hell. Nice. And yep. What the hell we watch? She just barfed up her guts, man. What are you making me watch? I'm like, no, you got to stick around. It gets even better. Keep watching.
You know what? This brings me to one other thing that we were actually talking about this off air before you came on, Corey, was people who were video store, who were horror fans in the video age, know movies as they came out in the video age under that title. For instance, Gates of Hell, like you mentioned, it's always Gates of Hell to me, but even though it's what Paura nella città dei morti viventi, which is City of the Living, or Fear in the City of the Living Dead was the full original title. Then it just became City of the Living Dead. Yes, that's the original title of the movie in Italian. And as it's released on like Blu-ray nowadays and all that stuff. But in the video rental days, we never had that, at least here in the U.S. under City of the Living Dead. It was always Gates of Hell. And it always is that way. Just like Burial Ground, you know, it's always going to be Burial Ground to me, not the Knights of Terror or whatever. So that's just a personal thing that I think most people who were horror fans renting videos back then probably like that.
Oh yeah, for sure.
Well, I guess we'll kind of wrap up the conversation with what would you recommend, Corey, if someone is looking to get into VHS collecting? Is there a book that you might recommend that they might want to check out?
None come to mind. I don't know. I don't know. So my book is out on Amazon. It's been out a couple of years now. Doing well. Called VHS Collecting: Modern Relevance of Home Video. It talks about video stores, talks about the history of tapes, talks about distribution companies, everything in between, really. As far as getting into it, check out the Facebook groups. That's probably the easiest way if you're more online. But I talk about VHS swaps. Like, most big cities kind of have them here and there if you really look for them. And if you're in a city or a town that doesn't, throw one. Just, there's probably people out there that have tapes or into the genre films, and you'd be surprised how many people show up for some of these things. Hmm. So, it's a pretty big community. A lot of people are buying and selling. I mean, if you got money, you start off on eBay, but it's not that fun, right? You really want to meet some people who are into the scene and get to know the bigger, broader community that's probably in your city. And it's, you're probably just sleeping on it. So, check it out.
Yeah. The one thing I think, that's appealing to a lot of people that do it is the thrill of the hunt, right? Like, so if, you know, if you're just buying stuff on eBay, you're not quite going to get that. You're not going to get that fix, right?
Not really. I mean, like, sometimes for filling holes in a collection, yeah.
Yeah.
A lot of people do that. But as far as like just day-to-day kind of like you said, thrill of the hunt. That's
I think the name of the game is finding it in a deep, dark hole somewhere for a quarter, right? That's the dream, right?
Exactly.
So if you're a collector of any kind, that's the way you want to do it. So. Well, Corey, we thank you for coming on. It was an awesome conversation. We encourage you to go check out his book. Like we said earlier, you can look it up on Amazon. VHS Collecting: The Modern Relevance of Home Video by Corey J. Gorski is the book. So I definitely encourage you to go buy a copy today and read up. It's a pretty quick, easy read too. So job well done on that, Corey.
Thank you very much.
And I'm sure we'll have you on at some other point to talk about something with home video or anything else that you want to talk about. You know, just get in touch with us and you can come on back. So we'll wrap it up there. So next week here on the Spook Show, I got to look at the calendar. Okay. This is the one guy that you're not talking to, Corey. There's another guy that comes on occasionally. His name's Will. And the way we do our movies is we kind of rotate, like, you know, I'll pick one. Then a couple weeks later, Donnie will pick one, so on, right? Well, it's Will's turn in the rotation, and he went through a couple of choices, but he landed on Skinnamarink. So that's going to be interesting to talk about.
Have you guys seen it?
I have not.
I have.
Yeah, we have. Over here.
Yeah.
No, I guess I'm the only outlier.
Yeah. This is going to be interesting. That's all I can say about this movie is it's interesting. I'll leave it there. So we're going to be talking about that next week. And onward and upward, we're going to have our big summer event. And we'll be talking about that in the coming months. So, Corey, we appreciate you coming on. So for Donnie, Tiana, Will, the professor, I'm Josh. We are the All-American Spook Show, and we'll talk to you next week.
And now, folks, it's time to say goodnight. We sincerely appreciate your patronage and hope we've succeeded in bringing you an enjoyable evening of entertainment. Please drive home carefully and come back again soon. Good night.